Are we ready now?
Yeah.
Okay. Tonight is the, what is it, the 22nd, is it? Tonight is the 22nd of April, right. And we are on Soto, Daf Chof Ches, Omed Aleph, about three quarters of the way down. Okay. All right. The Mishnah said, and this is, of course, the text which they're now going to discuss. So it said that, Kacho Yederish Sechai Ben Akatzov, right? And then Rabbi says that Shnei Piyomim Amurim Beparsha Nitmo Ove Nitmo Echad Labal Echad Labur. So far we have no problem with the Mishnah. Problem is only that the Gemara is going to create problems. Okay. All right. Now, the last time that we met, I spoke about the fact that there were fundamental differences of how you interpret a pasuk, okay? And one of them is the question whether we would say that, that the words of the Torah are to be understood as the Pshat says, right? Which was the approach of Rabbi Yishmael, for example, and also Rebbe and some others as well, okay? But the type of interpretation of Rabbi Akiva was that every letter deserves an additional interpretation. So that he would interpret that above meant that you have to add something or subtract something, okay? The word S, add something, subtract something, whatever it may be, and so on and so forth. So that being the case, we're going to find that there are going to be differences of opinion. So this is what we discover over here. All right. Tana Rabbanan. Okay, our sages taught us, of course it's a Baraisa, and it says, Shalosh Peyomim, Ra'amurim Beparsha, Im Nitmo'ah, Nitmo'ah, V'Nitmo'ah. All right? If we were to take a look at Parsha Sota in the Torah, it would be good if we had Chumashim in front of us so we could check, but take my word for this kind. Okay? That the word Nitmo'ah occurs in three different passages in that particular section. Nitmo'ah means, that she became unclean, literally. But, in other words, she sinned, right? So it's written im nitmo'ah, right? It's also written nitmo'ah, and it's also written v'nitmo'ah, okay? So the question is, lama, why do we need the word repeated so many times? Once would have been enough, maybe twice would have been enough. Why do we need it three times? So, they say, echad la'ba'al. One of them is to tell us that, it refers to the husband, as we'll see a little bit later. Well, we had already the idea too before mentioned that if the husband himself is guilty of having, committed relations that he should not have been doing, then in that case the water is not going to test him. Right.
As long as she accuses him,
right.
She accuses it to him also until everything's straightened out.
Correct. Okay. And then Echad LeBoel, which means that we know that the paramour, her lover, is going to be prohibited to her, not just, at the moment, but in general, right? Right. And then, since we have three, so what is the third one for? Good evening, Hawaii Sal, it's good to see you. Yeah. And what is the third one there for? So he says, the third one is Echad LeTruma. Divrei Rabbi Akiva. This is the opinion of Rabbi Akiva. Now, what is Truma? Okay, I just want... let me finish first. I'll be with this, and I'll be happy to answer your question. All right. Truma means, of course, that the law of Truma is that a Kohen is permitted to eat it, right? And not only a Kohen, but a Kohen's family. Okay. But... what happens, for example, to the daughter of a Kohen once she marries? So the answer is she loses it, okay?
All right.
However, she can regain it later on if she becomes a Grusha. Her husband divorces her and she goes back to her father's home. So in that case, she might regain it. The Torah says that in Bein Ein Lo, if she has no son, she has no child, then in that case, and she comes back to her father's home, then she can resume eating Truma. Otherwise, no. Okay. But here we're dealing with the case of what happens in the case of a woman accused of adultery, a sota. So in that particular case, we haven't yet proved the case that she is, but nevertheless we're going to see that since there is a possibility of guilt, so therefore she's going to lose the right to eat truma. Why? Because the action of adultery, or even behaving in a lascivious manner, you know, that after she had been warned not to, this puts her in the category of behaving like a zona, and of course we know a kohen is not allowed to marry a zona, so automatically this excludes her too. All right? And this is how Rabbi Akiva interprets this. Arthur, sorry to interrupt you.
No, it's okay. What happens in case, suppose she's always to be not guilty?
Guilty, right. I was
what happens? What happens to her relationship with the boy?
Okay, the answer is...
Is there going to be such a thing as the boy?
No. If it can be definitely proved to the Amorim, you know, that she did not commit any adultery, then in that particular case, she lives again with her husband and so on.
So theoretically, she could, if her husband gives her a get, theoretically, eventually she could marry.
Right. But let's say...
Which would make it suspicious.
Okay. But then, if you remember, we had different categories mentioned in the previous chapter, wherein the woman, we say, she doesn't drink, but at the same time, what is her status at this particular point? She is Asura Lubama. Okay?
She's what?
She is prohibited to her husband. Okay. Even though, you know, like for example, if you remember, you know, let's say there's a physical defect like...
I'm not talking about
he or she or something like that. And
I'm
so,
not, I'm
right,
talking
right.
There's no defect, she drinks
right,
and nothing.
Right,
else.
Right. She drinks and...
Nothing, she's clear.
And?
She's clear.
She is clear, so in that case she goes back to her husband. So
let me ask you another question.
And there's no taint in the body.
She has not been divorced, you see.
And there's no taint in the body.
Right, there's no taint. No taint.
Let me ask you this. Yeah. Suppose she's found not guilty.
Yeah.
Her husband divorces her anyway.
Yeah.
Okay, can she go back and eat truma?
No. Well, you ask a good question. They don't really cover that over here.
Because there are no children.
You see, if he divorces her, okay, for grounds other than the fact of what this happened over here, okay, then in that particular case, she's like any other divorcee. In other words, if she goes back again to her father's home, as we said, so she's permitted to eat from her father, not from her husband anymore. Okay.
Yeah, of course.
Okay, so that she would be permitted. But obviously she couldn't marry a kohen anymore because she's a divorced
woman.
Right?
The whole idea of her going to her father's house is really one that she goes back because she has no means of livelihood, so she goes back under his tent, so to say.
Yeah.
Once she supports herself, I don't think she can eat him.
No, not necessarily, because the Torah doesn't mention that. It's not
but
mentioned.
But the whole idea is that people in the father's house.
Yeah, well, we understand, I mean, the final analysis, we want to do something for her protection too. I mean, this is the reason why they say that.
I don't think women know the time we're talking about.
The daughters of the Kohen are judged very, very strictly, very severely.
Well, we know, I mean, that if they're actually caught in adultery with all the trimmings and the trappings, in other words, they were warned, and there were witnesses, and the witnesses warned her, and they went for the Beis Din and everything else and so on. And of course, in that particular case, the daughter of a Kohen, the punishment is straightforward. Yeah.
Straightforward,
right. Doesn't mean they don't burn at the stake. That's not what Sreifah is. But nevertheless, it's a horrible death. It's no question. What they do is that they put molten lead down into the throat.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
It's not very pleasant.
No.
It's faster than burning from the outside.
Yeah. All right. So anyway, this is Rabbi Akiva's opinion. So I'm a Rabbi Yishmael. Rabbi Yishmael says, Kal v'chaim, why can't we learn this simply by reasoning, by logical reasoning? Umar Gerusha, in the case of a divorcee, right? Shemuteres the Truma, we said that she is permitted to eat Truma again. As I said before, she goes back to her father's home, she can certainly eat Truma again, okay? And yet, what else? But Asura Tohunu, she cannot marry a Kohen. So Zu Shasur Bitruma, this woman who is prohibited from eating truma, because as we said before, I mean, this is an interpretation, you know, based on the fact that she behaved like a zayna. Mm-hmm. So in that particular case, we punish her by not permitting her to eat truma anymore, right? So Zu Shasu Betrum, it says Eino Din. Isn't it logical then, Shasu La Kahuna, that she's prohibited also to Kahuna? Right.
The question of Kahuna hasn't come up yet.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So Ma Talmud Loma, so the Gemara wants to know, what is the learning over here? It says, He Nitmo'a, the He Lo Nitmo'a, Im Nitmo'a, right? Why does it say so much? For he did more, the he did more, right? In other words, she became Tomei, she didn't become Tomei, right? So he says, if she became Taket Tomei, so Loma Shosa, why does she drink? In other words, why should she drink the Maimon? We know we have a clear case. In other words, that, she's been warned and everything else, and she secluded herself. We don't have witnesses that she committed adultery, but we have witnesses that there's a presumption of adultery, right. Okay? So in that case, we say, Eina Shosa, she doesn't drink, okay? But, we also learned that if the woman says, Tamei Ani, remember? Then in that particular case, she doesn't drink anymore, right? She doesn't drink.
Yeah, she says, I'm guilty.
She says, I'm guilty, right? Tamei Ani. So, in that case, yeah. If, she was not, then Loma Mashko, then why does he have her to drink? Why does he cause her to drink? So Magid L'chor HaKosav, he says, therefore the Pasuk tells you, Shehasofek Asura, that if we are in a case of doubt as to whether she did or she didn't, then automatically she is prohibited. Okay? What do you mean, she's prohibited? So we'll take a look at the Rashi for a second, okay? You see over there, Mike Lachosov Shah Sofek Asu, he says, and this is how we are to understand the Pasuk, says Rashi. Isha, right? Zu Shemo Nitmo, Shemo Lo Nitmo. This woman, we don't know whether she became the mayor or whether she didn't, right? So the Koma Lacho, and so the Pasuk tells him the Yashkeno. What should he do? He should cause her to drink the Mayim HaMorim, right? Levarer HaSpeko, in order to clear up the doubt, so we'll know. The Lo Mashka Lo, but if he doesn't have her come and drink the Mayim HaMorim, then in that case, Asura, she's prohibited. She's prohibited to him. And as a secondary, maybe she's also prohibited from eating Truma at this particular point, okay? So, now that they've gotten the point across that, Magad L'chor HaKosav, that the Pasuk tells you that Shasofek Asura, that in case of doubt, she is prohibited. So we're going to draw another case now, and that is with the case of the Sheretz. Okay, what is a Sheretz? A Sheretz is a creeping creature. Specifically, the Torah mentions such things as the Choylid, Atzov, Akbor, and things like that, and so on, that these are creeping creatures. Haltor, I'm not going through the whole list, okay? But these are all, this week's Seder, it happens that we find.
On last night's TV, someplace, and they forgot exactly where this, because of the change in the weather, full of locusts. Yeah. See, someplace in California.
In California itself.
Full of locusts.
Yeah. Grasshoppers, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so the law of Sheretz is that if you come in contact with the dead Sheretz, then automatically you become Tomei. Okay?
Really?
Yeah. Touch it, right? Or let's say
it touches
right.
You.
It touches you, something like that. Okay? So you become unclean as a result of it. So he wants to now say that there's a parallel. What is the parallel? If in the case of Soita, she becomes prohibited, even if it's only a question of Sofek, of doubt. So he wants to draw the parallel that Mekan Atodon, from this teaching right now, you draw the conclusion that the Sheretz, as far as the case of the Sheretz, it's the same idea, namely that what? That Sofek Asur, right? That if there's doubt as to whether you touch it or not, you can't prove it one way or another, then in that case, you have to assume that it's right, that it's Tomei. Okay? And he says, you know, here is the parallel. That's a mat soita. Just as in the case of the soto, sheloi osabo shoige kimezid, right, case of the soto, we distinguish between what? One who did it only because it was a mistake. In other words, it wasn't deliberate, right? And we distinguish between the shogeg and the mazid, the one who did it, you know, with full knowledge, you know, the deliberately, right? The oinez karotzein, and being forced. We make a distinction between the woman who was forced, let's say who was raped or something like that, you understand? With karotzein, with the woman who willingly wants to have intercourse, right? So, just as in the case of the sota, where we distinguish between shogeg and mezid, right, or between onus and rotzon, we say nevertheless also bor sofek kevadai. We came to the conclusion, just a line or two above, that what, that where is doubt, it acts as if it were an actual case. In other words, we said that because of doubt, automatically what? So we say that she's excluded, you know, from eating truma, right? So sheretz, the case of a sheretz, she also by shege kemezid, the inis karotzein, where again it is possible to have, you know, that the person who happened to touch it by mistake is treated as if he were deliberately. In other words, we make no distinction between you know, how the contact was made between the sheretz and the human being, right? Whether it was by error or whether it was by mazid, right? By full intention to do so, right? Whether it was oines karotzein, whether it was something which happened accidentally as compared to willingly, eino din, so isn't it logical to assume then sheyaseh bo sofek kevadai, that doubt is considered as if it were absolutely so. Okay, let us turn back to the Rashi right now at the bottom of the previous page, because Rashi introduces something very, very interesting over here that from the text itself is not that clear. But we'll see what Rashi reads into it. Okay?
Right.
Yeah.
Where are you?
Five lines from the bottom. Okay. Mekana Tolomed, he says, from the, here we learn that a Kal Vachomer for the Sherets. What is the Kal Vachomer? That's Sofek Noga, Bitaras. You see, it's not only a question whether the Sherets touched a person who was clean, but let's say the Sherets happened to touch food, which was Tahara. I mean, it was pure, it was fit, you know, let's say for a Kohen, it's fit for the Beis HaMikdash, you understand? That's Tahara. Okay, and let's say that a sheretz touched it, right? But it's sofek, maybe it touched it, you know, sofek loinoga, right? So what? How do we rule? So the machzikin on law betuvim sofek. So because of doubt, we still hold it as if it actually it happened. Okay, so sota. Loi, Osobo, and so on. Nichsib. Right. Says Rashi. The Pasuk says, right, the he loi nisposo, right, Asura. Ho nisposo, Muteros. So this is a very, very funny interpretation. We had it way, way back several months ago, I have to tell you. Because over here, the word nisposo is not actually the way you normally would take it. If I were to ask you, what does the word nisposa, nisposa mean? It means it was caught. It's caught. She was caught, nisposa. So, if we would take a look at the pshat would be that if she was caught, then we would presume that she was guilty, right? If she wasn't caught, we would assume that
she's not guilty.
But that's precisely the opposite of what Rashi says,
yeah,
because he's basing
it. Opposite,
yeah. Yeah, he's basing it upon an interpretation that was given earlier in Sotah. Okay, namely that the healing is posa, he understands that she was not forced into it. She wasn't, you know, compelled by somebody who was much stronger than her, you know, to do it. So in that particular case, in other words, the presumption would be that she was willing, right? The healing is possible. Yeah, absolutely. This is the wording of the Torah. That's why I say, Rashi's interpretation is, we would say, punkt fakert. It's just the opposite of, you know, what the pshat is. But as I say, he bases it upon how it was interpreted way, way back. I forget already what daf it was. That they understood the word disposo in the sense that she was, let's say, violated by a man. So in that particular case, the healing disposo would mean that she wasn't violated. In other words, what? That she did it willingly. So therefore, she is what? She's asura. She is prohibited, right? Whereas on disposo, let's say that she was violated, she was forced into it, then in that particular case, muteris, then she is permitted to her husband. Okay? Vehu adin l'shogeg. And likewise, we can rule that just as in the case of oinus, as we said, you know, that means you're forced, you're violated. Okay, that's oinus. Okay? So he says, Vehu adin, and we can make the same ruling, the same comparison in the case of shogeg. What is shogeg? An error. She's, you know, there's an error involved. Namely, and here's Rashi's interpretation, very interesting example. It says, Ishtoi v'yeshes ish imoy babayas. There are two women in the house. The man is there together with his wife and also a woman who is married to somebody else. Okay?
Because her husband.
The husband is not there.
The husband is not there.
He wanted to have intercourse with his wife, right? But who did it happen to be? It happened to be the other woman, the Yeshus Ish, okay?
He made a mistake.
You have to remember, they were in the dark. They didn't have any electricity. And probably they didn't even light a candle or a lamp or something like that.
Her husband wasn't there, so how could she allow it?
How could she allow it?
She didn't know.
She didn't know.
She knows her husband's not there.
Maybe he jumped on her and before she could protest or something. I don't know.
This is why people didn't like to...
to call a woman...
Mother and daughter.
The same name. Because a mistake might occur. He would say, Miriam, wake up, I want to make love to you.
And it's
the other Miriam. So, okay, so in this particular case, right, this Kavin Liyishto, as we said, he wanted to make love to his wife. And this Damna Luzo, but it was the other woman. Yafhi Shkoga, or Shogagon. She also was in error. Why? Kisvura Shehubalo, because she thought that maybe her husband had come back. Wanted her. You see, even though we said, you know, that we didn't see another, but maybe her husband did come in, or something like that. So, as a result of that, what do we learn? So, we learn that in either case, she is muteris, right? Because it was an honest mistake, or she was raped. One of the two. So either one would not disqualify her from her husband. Now, of course, we're talking about ordinary husband. Do have to tell you that if we're a Kohen, that's already in a different situation. Yeah. Okay. So,
that's interesting.
Yeah.
Now, before
if we couldn't read Rashi, we'd have Soros.
Now, before Rashi says, Sofek Noga Batahas.
Right.
Now, it can't be a life for him. Because that doesn't, the sheretz doesn't affect the life of him.
No, definitely not.
So it must be a mincha, carbon mincha, or flour, something like that.
All right, that's if we're talking about korbanos. Okay.
Yeah.
But it could be food in general, because don't forget that they were very particular that food too should be eaten b'tahara.
Yeah.
This was true of the Peshushim in general. This is the Pharisaic point of view, that you went overboard, or you went the extra mile, let's say, okay? That whereas the average person would eat chulin, in other words, they would eat ordinary type of food, right? But the Purushim insisted upon eating chulin b'tahara. They insisted upon eating even ordinary food with the same rules and regulations and rigors, you know, that you had when it came to eating Tara. So obviously, if a sheretz happened to touch it, then in that particular case, it would automatically make it tummy, you see. And if we don't know whether the sheretz had touched it or not, then what do we have to say? So we have to say, in case of doubt, consider it as having become tummy. So this is the parallel that they draw then between the Saita and between the sheretz. But we're not finished yet. So not easy, not easy. Okay. All right, so second word on the first line on the top. Okay. Umimokim Shabos. Okay. Which means literally, and from where you are coming from, in other words, okay, you're arguing like this. So let's examine that premise a little more deeply, right? Ma Saito Rishus Hayochid of Sheretz Rishus Hayochid. So let's learn the following. That first of all, where is a sota? Where is she a sota? It has to be in Rishus HaYochid. In other words, in a private domain. Obviously, she's not doing it out in the street.
Then we have no problem.
Right.
On the front lawn.
Then we have no problem.
So, she's carrying out her action in a private domain, a private home, wherever it may be, right? So, Av Sheretz Rishus HaYochid. So, likewise, where do we say that the sheretz is going to be metame, the food? It's going to be in the Rishus HaYochid. Right.
In public domain.
But not in the public domain. Correct. Okay. What else? Uma Soto. Likewise, inasmuch in the case of the Soto, what? Dover Sheyesh Bodas Nishoel. You have to have a situation where you have somebody literally with a mind or with knowledge that they could be asked. In other words, in the case of the sota, you ask her, what happened? You ask the man, let's say, when, what happened? Yes, the witnesses, what happened? These are people that they're capable of giving an answer, right? So, av sheretz, so likewise, if you're going to condemn the sheretz, right? Uh-huh. Or if you want to prove whether it was tame, you know, whether it was metame or with, you know, metahir, in other words, you know, did it make tummy or it didn't make tummy, then in that particular case, dover sheyesh bo das lishoil. You have to have also somebody with knowledge, with understanding, that who could be questioned so that you could get an answer as to what the circumstances were. Umikan, and from this, Omru, they said, dover sheyesh bo das lishoil, right? Where something, you know, you have somebody who could be questioned as to, you know, what the circumstances were. And of course, we're talking at this moment really about the sheretz, but nevertheless, as you'll see, I mean, a parallel can be applied. Okay. That the people around who could witness, who could be questioned as to where, you know, the sheretz touched the food and made it tome, right? So Rishus HaYochid, if it happened in the Rishus HaYochid, so as we said before, in that particular case, feiko tome, right? Even if it's doubtful, then we say that it's tome, just as what we had on the previous page. In other words, now they're trying to give conditions. Under what circumstances? Circumstances that you have somebody you could question to find out where it happened, and if so, then in the Rishus HaYochid, we assume that it was, because, you know, the sheretz could more easily have access over there, whereas in Rishus HaRabim it wouldn't be, right? Rishus HaRabim spake a Torah, right? And the Sheein Bodas, the Shoel, but where we do not have anybody whom we could question to find out, so in that case, Bein Birishus HaYochid, Bein Birishus HaRabim, right? It makes no difference whether it was in the private domain or whether it was in the public domain, sfeiko tohor. If there is doubt, then in that particular case, the doubt is, we still say it's tohor. Why? Why do we say it's tohor? Because there's nobody to really testify as to what the circumstances were. Right. Okay. The Rabbi Yishmael, Okay, so now we have again an argument between Rabbi Yishmael and Rabbi Akiva. Okay? Now, if you remember, a few weeks ago, before Pesach, of course, we had a business that because Rabbi Akiva, it's on the previous page, okay, Rabbi Akiva is Dervish every Vav, right? So therefore, when he gets Nitmor, Nitmor, and so on and so forth, so what does he do? He says each Vav adds, and so therefore he winds up with six different teachings. Right? Rabbi Yishmael, on the other hand, who says that the Torah talks Apasha the language, in other words, not looking, don't try to interpret things that are difficult to interpret, then in that particular case, he says, look, there are only how many Nitmors? Only three. Okay? So far, what did we say? We said that the three were to prohibit her to the Baal, to prohibit her to the Boel, and the other one as far as eating truma is concerned. But at the same time, we had a discussion about kahuna, if you remember. So this is now the question. How do you work that out? Okay? Okay, so Rabbi Yishmael, so he's arguing about what? Omer Rabbi Akiva, truma. Rabbi Akiva says that we have six six different nitmor, because he says every vav adds another one. Okay, so that being the case, one of the things that it prohibits is what? It's truma. Okay, but that's only one of the things. Umahadalei, right? And then afterwards he continues and he says Umahadalei ihu. He then repeats and he says, you know what? And I also prohibit kahuna. In other words, you know, that she cannot not only not marry a kohen, but also she's possible, you know, from truma, etc., etc. Okay. Vesu, and furthermore, the Rabbi Akiva, kahuna menole. Where does he find the pasuk that says that, you know, she's possible from the kahuna, right? V'chitemor, and if you say kahuna lo tzvicha kro, that we don't need a separate pasuk to say that she is prohibited from kahuna, sheharei also bought sofek zayna kezayna, because we say that the implication already is that if she is accused of adultery and we have no way of proving it any further, then in that case we say that she's acting like a zayna, because you know, so therefore she gets the same punishment as a zayna. In the case of a zayna is prohibited from eating truma. Of course, she can't be married to a kohen either. It says, you know, that the kohen is not allowed to marry Isha, a zayna, a chalola, and so on and so forth, right? All right. All right. So, truma nami, so they object and they say, truma too? Lazy boy, Karod, and we would say that Truman should not require a separate potsuk, because remember they said that the third nitmor, right, referred to Truman. So he said that that shouldn't require a potsuk either. Sharei also bought sofik soino kezoino, right, because in the final analysis, since we say that her actions made her, even though she's a doubtful zoino, they made her like a zoino. And as a zoner, she would be prohibited. So obviously, then truma would be out. So what do we need a pasuk for? So the answer is Ela Rabbi Akiva. So now Rabbi Akiva says Arboa Kreksive. He cuts down his interpretation now, not this, you know, from six to four. All right. So why do we have four?
There are three words, nitmo'ah, 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 right? Im nitmo'ah, 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 right? Right, correct.
You should have only added one. You should have
correct. You should have said there were five, okay? But he found
five,
six.
Only four.
Okay.
There's only one this.
Okay, right. But nevertheless, let's accept the premise only. Let's accept the premise. I agree with you that I'm not quite happy with the mathematics of Rabbi Akiva in this particular case either, because of the fact that the first one says, you know, im nitmo, okay, yeah, right,
okay.
This isn't the final say anyway.
Huh?
This isn't the final say anyway.
No, so it's not the final say. That's not the point. The point is we have to understand where he's coming from. We have to understand where Rabbi Yishmael is coming from. Okay. I mean, we shouldn't simply say, well, because the final conclusion may not agree with him, that therefore we shouldn't understand what he's trying to say. Obviously, he has a point of view too. Because inasmuch as throughout the Talmud, he likes to be marba, in other words, to add something else, to say, you know, that the text, if it were written just this, but since there's a little extra to the text, so in that case, we have to look, what is the extra that's involved over there? And I don't have to tell you, I mean, that that is quite typical of many drushes. Many drushes work on that basis. On the other hand, Rabbi Yishmael is the man who believes in pshat. And in that particular case, he doesn't look for, strange interpretations. He's looking to find what does the Torah say, and, let's work on that basis. Now, neither of them, of course, rule out necessarily such a thing as a kal vachomer. You understand? Because that already is logical deduction. If you have a pasuk for this, and you can see that there is a great parallel between this and this, then in that case you can say that what is true for A, therefore could logically apply to B as well. So, he's not bereft after all, don't forget, it's Rabbi Yishmael who comes up with Shlosha Svein Midos, that there are 13 different methods, for explaining and, deriving teachings from the Torah text, you see. So obviously, you can say that maybe the Peshat is this, but nevertheless, he can find, by using logical reasoning, another interpretation based on the original interpretation.
Did you say the Vav stands for Nitma?
Another Nitma.
The Vav and the Yod,
it says the Nitma, okay?
The Yod and the Vav stands for
both.
Huh?
No, 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 not Or. Simply the Vav, the Vav. The letter Vav.
There's no S in there.
No, not over here.
Yeah.
In other places, there is an S, you see. Famous example. Rabbi Akiva says that S includes somebody else all the time. Okay? So they said to him, we have a pasuk, Es ad Hashem alekecho tiro, right? You shall revere God. Of course, I say Savoid and so on and so forth. So who do you include together with the S since you're interpreting? Okay, so finally came up with the following. He says, that also includes Talmidei Chachamim. You have to show respect for that, just as you show respect for the Beinish Lady. Okay. But, it's a very good rejoinder to Rabbi Akiva, there's no question.
The answer to always must be the parents.
Right, right. Okay. So, all right. So, anyway, as we said, we have now reduced Rabbi Akiva to four. Okay. But why do we need four psukim when, after all, we saw the word v'nitmo three times, right? Nitmo was written three times. So he says, abor kroik stive, right? So, chad libal. One of them refers to the husband. In other words, she's prohibited to her husband from the moment that he accuses her of being a sota, and, until such time that she proves the case by doing the ma'amar. The chad libal. Another one is to prohibit her to the paramour, okay? She can't marry him, okay? The chad, the kahuna, right?
The
truma. The chad, the truma. Okay, one, another one for kahuna, another one for truma. Right, she's, she's prohibited to all things. Rabbi Yehuda, plus a kroik, right? Rabbi Yehuda says, look, there are only three times it's written, right? So it's chad lebaal, right? One for the husband, the chad le boil, one for the boil, the chad le truma, right? So, what happened to kahuna? So he says, kahuna asya be kal v'chomer. That you derive through a kal v'chomer. If she's prohibited from truma, so we'd say she's also prohibited from the kahuna. Okay? So, Gemara says, for Rabbi Yishmael, the maid is to krua le truma or kahuna. So, Rabbi Yishmael, why do you need a pasuk for truma and kahuna? Ask him a kal v'chomer. You said that you could derive it logically by a kal v'chomer. So what do you need all those psukim, right? Don't need a pasuk for kahuna and truma. because you can work it out logically, then in that case, all that we would need is how many? Two. Right? So he says, Dilma, perhaps, ki yitzterich lechahumo, right? Maybe the implication is that if we need a pasuk for kahuna, a truma shayah, maybe she should be permitted to eat truma. So amalachah, so he answers you, nistabra, it makes sense, he says, dum yud baal uvoil. If you make a comparison to the baal and boil, namely, ma baal uvoil mechayim, just as she is prohibited both to her husband and to her lover as long as they are alive, right? So af truma name mechayim, right? So truma too is also applies as long as what? As long as she's alive and she's been declared possible to eating it, right? Lafuke kahuna tila achamiso, and this is to exclude the kahuna after the death of the husband. Well, Rabbi Akiva is not happy with that either. Okay, but Rabbi Akiva says dum yod baal uvoel, right? Leslie, he doesn't make this comparison between baal and boil. He just doesn't make this comparison. He needs therefore psukim in order to show, you know, the business with truma and kahuna, right? The iname islay. Likewise, if you have a case of milso de asher bekal v'chomer, that even though there are cases where you could derive a teaching logically from a kal v'chomer, right, by logical reasoning, nevertheless, even in many cases, torach because of lo kra, right, the Torah still nevertheless wants to make sure that you understand that this is something which is specifically prohibited or permitted by a word in the Torah, and not simply on the basis of logical reasoning. Because with logical reasoning, sometimes it can go amiss. But if we have a specific word in the Torah, then we'll know what the ruling
very
should be.
Yeah.
Right. Okay, I think I'm going to stop at this point. I'm running out of steam and out of voice right now.
Thanks, Vera.
Yeah. Okay.
So today is
May 6th. May the 6th,
1998.
Right. We continue on the Chof Tesom and Aleph from where we left off the previous session.
So you.
Okay. Omar Rav Gidl. So Rav Gidl said, Omar Rav, the name of Rav. He said, Dover sheyesh bu das l'shoel, v'yem bu das l'shoel. The machlokes that we had before as to whether you can verify something by asking questions, or where you can't verify something by not asking questions, because obviously a living person you can ask, but with things, how can you ask things? You say you can't do it. So he says, anyway, this, is there a source for this in the Torah as well, for this kind of, you know, machlokes? So he says, yes. He says, mehai kro nafka. In other words, the opinion of Rav, right, that it can be derived from the following pasuk, and the pasuk says, "V'habosor ashe yiga b'chol tomei," the flesh, because we're talking about sacrificial flesh in this case, okay? But you know, remember, flesh is not only, I mean, we think in terms, you know, that maybe sacrifices are all burnt, but remember, many of the sacrifices are not all burnt; only parts of them are burnt. And the rest would be eaten by the Kohanim, or in the case of Shlomim, Teda, and so on, by the people who bring the Korban, say. So, but what would happen if the flesh itself would come in contact with something which is Tomei? Then in that case, the Torah says, Lo Yochel, it cannot be eaten. So, according to Rav's interpretation, then what? Vadai Tomei hu de Lo Yochel. Where we know definitely that it is Tomei, definitely cannot be eaten, right? But sofek tomei v'sofek tohor yeyochel. But we would say that where there is a doubt as to whether it's tomei or doubt that it is tohor, then we would say that this flesh could be eaten, right? This would be the logical inference. So aim or seifo, then in that case, let's take a look further at the same passage in the Torah. What does it say afterwards? It says the habosor called tohor yochal basar. Okay,
In other words, as far as flesh is concerned, then whoever is tahor, he may eat flesh. Now, this is the pshat of the pasuk, okay? In other words, somebody who's tamei cannot eat, you know, from kachim, right? But somebody who is tahor, right, it's called tahor, yochal basar, right? He's permitted to eat it, okay? However, we see that they're going to take that, you know, that, you know, the hat tahor to refer to what? To the flesh itself. That if it is tahor, then it can be eaten. But if it is tamei, then it can't be eaten. Okay, so the question, you know, in this case is, it's not necessarily the person we're talking about, but it can also be the object itself, you see, that we're talking about. Okay? Now, from the pasuk, which now reads, v'abosor kotol yochol, bosor, right, then we would say, v'adai tahor, hu deyochel. This is why I say, if we are positive that it is tahor, notice I said it in this particular case rather than he, although there's no reason why we should exclude the he as well, right, that where it is definitely tahor, then this is what may be eaten, right, or v'adai tahor, hu deyochel bosor, right, or a person, maybe let's take it in the first case, a person who is tahor, he's something, you know, he's the kind of person who can eat it, you know, the hallowed flesh, right? But sofek tomei, sofek tahor, lo yochal, right? But something which is, or someone who is, that first we said that the pasuk should be interpreted what? That if it's sofek tahor, sofek vadai, right? And in that case, we say you should be able to eat it. Now we come to the conclusion that if it's sofek tomei or sofek tahor, right? Then in that case, no, you cannot eat it. Okay? So elalav, so that being the case, mami noah, then we have to assume the following: kan sheyesh bodas lishoel, kan sheim bodas lishoel. In one case, we have somebody who could be questioned, so we could find out, in other words, whether it is tahor or tomei, right?
I mean, if the flesh is tahor,
right? Whether the flesh is tahor, you know, or maybe we could find out definitely what that something did. It came in contact with something which is tomei. Okay. But you know, where you cannot verify it, right? Kan shein medas lishoel, so. It's still really a question mark, okay? Still a question mark, okay? The Ixtarich, and I need, why? The Rav Gidol Amarav, we need this interpretation of Rav Gidol Amarav, the Ixtarich, the Migmar, and I have to now derive a teaching or make a parallel to what? Misota, from the case of the Sota. What did we say about the Sota? We said that, you know, first of all, obviously, if we can verify, it's one thing. If we can't verify, that's a different problem. But we also had a different ruling a couple of pages back that we said that sota has to be something which occurs where? In the Rishus HaYochid, in the private domain. Obviously, she's not going to go flaunting her rations in public, in the Rishus HaRabim, right? Yeah. So then, what did they do? So then, they came to a case, if you remember, Sheretz. In other words, a reptile, or whatever you want to call it, a creeping creature, right? Which is classified as being a source of tumah. And what did we decide? So we said, making a parallel to the case of the sota, if this reptile happens to come in contact in the Rishus HaYochid, then we would say that in that case, you vadai tomei, okay?
Obviously.
But, right. But if it is in the Rishus HaRabim, then it's not necessarily, then we could say that in the Rishus HaRabim, it's tahor, okay?
Oh, how come?
How come? Because in the Rishus HaRabim, all kinds of people going by, and so therefore also they could see it and they could maybe avoid it. Whereas in the Rishus HaYochid, let's say it's hiding in the grass or something like that, the grass hasn't been cut. So in that particular case, it's possible, you know, to come into contact.
The same condition can be true in both places.
Okay, I'm not denying that we could logically draw that inference, but I'm only saying, you know, that if you're going to make a parallel, this happens to be one of the parallels that they were making, okay? So he says, you can learn from Sayyidah. The Yimirav,
because if it was based upon the statement of Zerav, then Hava Aminu, I would say, Bein Bishus HaYochid, Bein Bishus HaRabim, right? It would make no difference where the reptile is, namely whether it's in Rishus HaRabim or Rishus HaYochid, right? You come in contact with it, bingo, you're a tummy. That's all there is to it. So this is Rav's opinion. But as we see, you know, if we make a parallel to Soto, then we have to say that no, Rishus HaRabim, it is not. Whereas in Rishus HaYochid, it is tummy. Okay? So, I don't have to tell you that there's a great deal of difficulty. Of course it's a machlokes.
Which I'm sure is not settled.
Right, right. It's not really settled. No. So, yeah, so leave him in Seder. So, im Seder, and if you're going to draw the parallel from Seder, then he says, Chava Mina, I have to say, Ad the Iko Das, no Gea Magia Tzvichah. Right? I must know definitely, not only the Nogea, what touches, but Umagia, also what has been touched.
Hmm. By the
right.
Reptile.
And therefore I need it. Now, the way they come, and the commentators come, they say that according to the last opinion, there's a machlekes again, that between what has touched and what has been touched, that what touches and what has been touched, okay? That do you require the knowledge of both, or do you require only the knowledge of one?
Depends on
you understand? There's a question about that, okay? So, according to one opinion, one would be sufficient. According to the other, we really should have
two.
Okay. So, as we can see, we're in a difficult situation at this moment, because this whole business of, you know, of tar and tumors, it's a very strange concept to us today, since, you know, we're so many hundreds of years removed. Right, right. But we're not finished with it yet. Okay. Now, at this point, we again take a look at the Mishnah at the very beginning of the chapter. To see what is the quote about Rabbi Akiva. Okay?
So it's Chavzayin.
Yeah. Okay.
On the page.
Okay. All right. So on the wrong page over here?
Yeah, you actually see it.
Yeah.
Where are we?
Right, okay, the very first Mishnah, which we more or less covered in previous weeks, dealt with this problem of the Baal and the Boil, right? In other words, the husband
and
the parabot, the lovabot, all right? Where we came to the final conclusion that if she commits, or at least she's suspected of having committed, and she has not been able to prove it through the Mayim Hamorim, then she is prohibited both to her husband and also to the parabot. Okay?
Right.
So that was the first Mishnah. Then the Mishnah continues with a series of statements that essentially, for the most part, we find in other places in the Mishnah. And it deals with Bo Bayom, right? On the day, and as we interpret it, this is the day upon which there was this revolution in the yeshiva in Yavne against Rabbi Gamliel, and they appointed Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah in his place, and at that particular time, they opened up the doors to let anybody in to come who wanted to learn Torah. Whereas before, Rabbi Gamliel had been very picky as to who he would permit. He said that they had to be tochel kevorah, in other words, inwardly what they were outwardly. He wouldn't otherwise, you know, accept them. And here, Rabbi Eliezer ben Azariah was willing to take them in. And so various people came and they gave testimony, various, you know, teachings that they had had. So one of them was as follows. If you remember, Bobayom Dorsh Rabbi Akiva, right, that Rabbi Akiva said, in connection with the Kli Cheres, right?
Yeah.
This, of course, is what we read in the Torah the other day, that in the case of a Kli Cheres, actually it's in Parsha Shmini, that if you have an earthenware vessel, Asher Yipol Mehem El Tocho, where something falls into it,
right,
which is, of course, Tomei, then Kol Asher Besocha Yitva, right? Everything inside of it becomes Tomei. And he proved it by saying, Eino Omer Tomei, because the, right, doesn't say whatever is in, you know, whatever falls inside is Tomei. Instead, what does it say? It says, Hello, Yitmor. It says, Kol Asher Besocha Yitmor. Now, Yitmor can be read as if it said Yitamei. Whatever falls into it, not only by itself becomes Tomei, Yitmor, but it could also be Yitamei, because remember, there are no dots over there, right? So we can read it in the sense, and it also makes other things
Tomei.
All right? So that this now brings this whole Torah that we have about what we call an Av HaTuma, right? That's one of the the literally the father of impurity, right? Like Saddam Hussein Yimach Shmo said, the mother of all this. So this is the father, right?
The
father of impurity. So right, a sheretz is right. A mess, okay?
A mess,
okay. And you have the stage called Avatuma, right? Then you have the stage called Rishon Atuma, okay? Which is I don't know, that's maybe an inch removed from
first stage.
Okay, but it's still a primary source of Tuma, Rishon Atuma. Then if a Rishon Atuma touches something or someone, right, then what happens becomes a Sheni Atuma, okay? Now, what would happen if
a
Sheni Lituma, if it touches, let's say, food, it can make that food a Shlishi Lituma. It can make it a third, right?
So
in some cases, a Shlishi can make a Ravi Lituma.
How far can it go?
That's the end of the line.
The end of the line
is Ravi Lituma, right? Okay.
So by that time, it's so diluted?
Yeah, right. So, at any rate, all right. Besides, it doesn't apply to everything. It applies primarily to kachim and trumo and so on. You see, okay. But nevertheless, again, as I said before, if you are in the habit of eating even chulin in the spirit of tara, then in that particular case, you are bound just as much by it as by anything else. You see, okay. Yeah. So All right, so that was the statement that Rabbi Akiva made. Of course, there's a lot more to follow in that particular Mishnah, which we learned, but this is what they're going to talk about.
We stand by that statement, which anything falls into the Kli...
into a Kli Cheres.
Everything is Tomei.
Correct. Okay. Correct. If it falls in, yes. Well, why do I say that? Because according to the law, actually, in the Kli Cheres, if you just touch it on the outside,
it's an earthenware jar.
Yeah, earthenware. It could be a jar, but it could also be, as we saw in that particular case, it could also be an oven which was made of earthenware, because you know they had like primitive stoves, and one type of primitive stove was to take mounds of earth, let it bake, and so on. Have a hollow space in between over there, and then it could be used for baking.
They didn't have firing ovens.
Right,
place, yeah.
Right. So, I know I've seen pictures of, let's say, Indians down in the southern part of Mexico, where they're far from, the civilization, and, they also do these primitive things.
And did his whole house like that?
Yeah, I guess it's possible. There's no question. Right? Okay, so.
Where are we?
Naturally, what would happen if you decide that you're going to bake a kikar, a loaf of bread? So we saw that in that case, if the Kli Cheres, right, something fell into it which was Tomei, then in that particular case, if you bake bread in it, so the bread becomes Tomei. But what is its degree of Tumah? The answer is it becomes a Sheni Tumah, okay? Because the Kli Cheres, this was the primary,
yeah.
Right. Or maybe it's a third. Why? Because we could say Noch Besser. The Sheretz, if it fell in, that was a Rishon. Correct? the kli cheres into which it fell is a sheni, and the piece of bread that you baked in it is already a shlishit. Okay, now naturally there are different rules that apply to the degree of tuma. Okay, all right, so we're off. Okay.
Where are we going?
We're, see, it was 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Okay, we're 7 lines from the bottom. The last word over there. All right. Right. So, Umeyacha de Ein Lo, Loma Tome. So now they ask the following question. It says, look, where do you derive all this business about a first degree, a second degree, a third degree? You know, the Torah doesn't specify that. All that the Torah simply said is what? That if something touches, so it becomes tummy. But to assume, you know, that you have tummy making more tummy, making more tummy, and so on and so forth, where does it say in the Torah? Right? So Omer Rav Yehuda, Omer Rav, so Rav Yehuda said, the name of Rav, he says, Min HaTorah Ein Lo. He says, Taka, a specific pasuk in the Torah, we don't have. Okay? We don't have. But, Medin Kal V'Chomer, but when you come in with logical reasoning, you know, major, minor, minor, major, whatever you want to call it, you know. In that case, we can originally, you know, we can come up with an opinion that we have. All right, now, how does he base it? So he says, Mat vul yom shemuto b'chulin poisel b'truma kikor sheni sheposel b'chulin enudin sheyaseh shlishi b'truma. Okay, first I will translate it, and then I better explain a little. It's not easy, I told you, this is a tough passage. Okay, first of all, it says, Et vul yom. Right? I'll explain that in a minute. A tevul yom is permitted to eat chulin, right? In other words, ordinary food which is not sanctified, right? But nevertheless, if he eats truma, then he makes it possible, right? Because he's still not in a state of absolute tara, okay? So, if that's the case, then kikor sheni, a loaf of bread which is already a sheni letuma, right? So shepasul b'chulin, and nevertheless we say that it's no good even as chulin, right? So eino din, isn't it logical sheyaseh shlishi b'truma, that it's going to create a shlishi as far as truma is concerned? Okay, so now we have to know what our terms are. Okay, first of all, who is a tvul yom? All right, Torah says, if you remember, you know, what happens, for example, to a Kohen? To whom, well, let's say he had a seminal emission. Okay?
When?
Could be the night. Could be during the day. Torah isn't specifying. All right. So, what is the din over there? So, the din is that during the day, as it gets towards sunset, sometime in the afternoon, he has to go and entitle himself.
Coming.
In the Mikvah, okay? But he's still not allowed to eat kachim at that particular point. Why? Because the Pasuk says, this we had the brachas too, the Pasuk says, Uvo HaShemesh v'Toher, right? That when the sun sets, then he becomes Tohor,
right?
V'Yachar, and afterwards, Yochal Melekoroshim, okay? Then he can eat kachim. So in other words, the fact that he's already gone into the mikveh still does not make him 100% valid for eating kosher. He has to wait also for the night to come, stars to shine before, you know, that day is considered over, and he can once more resume eating kosher. So that's a tvul yom. But you can have tvul yom also in other cases as well, because we have also cases, let's say, of you know, a person had a like a zov, you know, a person had some say that's like an infection, like gonorrhea or something, yeah, like that, you know, and or let's say that you're a nausea, you know, you take a vow upon yourself that you're going to be a nausea, and you know, you have to count days and so on. Now, even if they tovel themselves in the mikveh during the day, they still cannot be considered, you know, completely valid until it, you know, the nightfall. Okay. Again, I'm being a little bit technical at this particular point, but that's the general idea of a tevul yom. Tevul yom, he has taka tovel himself during the day, right? That's the tevul yom part. But nevertheless, he cannot reach the full status of tara until night comes. Okay. So, what does it say about the tevul yom? It says the tevul yom, right, is mutar b'chulin. He can eat things which are not kosher. You understand? In other words, let's say, getting back to the Kohen, because that's the nicest example, okay? Let's say that the Kohen wants to eat, I don't know, let's say a salad at home, or whatever it may be. So, as long as it's not hallowed food, he can eat it. But if he wants to eat kochim, then in that particular case, he must wait till night before he could eat that. All right, so he's mutar b'chulin, right? But at this particular point, if he should decide that he wants to eat truma, he's still tamei, because night has not yet
come.
So that being the case, what is going to happen to the truma if he takes hold of it?
Becomes
tamei. Okay? So therefore, according to Rav Yehuda in the name of Rav, then in that particular case, we should say then that kikar, which is a sheni, right? In other words, it's only a second degree tumo, sheposo b'chulin, which you cannot eat chulin at that. You cannot use it as chulin. Let's put it that way. Okay, it's tamei, so we can't eat it as chulin. All right, but nevertheless, eino din. So wouldn't it be logical to say then that if it touches something else, and if it touches truma, right, she yaseh shlishi betruma, that it would make truma shlishi also tomei, even though the truma would be the third degree, the third stage, so to speak. Okay. So he says, well, ikam the mifroch, you might break this argument. In other words, you could say the argument doesn't hold. You know, a kal v'chomer, you have to be able to prove logically, okay? But if I can disprove your logic, then the kal v'chomer doesn't stand, okay? So he says, ikam the mifroch, we might argue against this kal v'chomer by saying the following. Ma'al etvul yom, right? Look, etvul yom shekein afatuma, he can still be a first source of tumor, right? For example, etvul yom could be somebody who is tamei meis, according to Rashi. Take a look at the last line of Rashi over there. In other words, he's come in contact with somebody who is dead, right? Ozov, Tzora, right? And even though, you know, any of these people, nevertheless, as we said, they themselves are actually an av hatuma, as long as they're still in this particular stage, okay? And they say, are you going to bring it mitvul yom de sheretz? Are you going to compare it to, let's say, if he touched the sheretz, and say, mal mitvul yom de sheretz, shekein b'mino av hatuma, okay? If you say that anything like it is an av hatuma, So Kli Cheres will prove that it's not necessarily so. Why? Because Ma the Kli Cheres Shekein Metamei Miaviro, right? The Kli Cheres has a prohibition which is peculiar to it. What is the prohibition peculiar to it? It makes Tamei by anything coming within. Avir, of course, literally means the air of the Kli Cheres. But what it means is anything that falls into the interior, even if it doesn't even touch anything. But nevertheless, just by being within the, literally the air, the atmosphere, well, whatever you want to say,
the environment.
Within the environment of the Kli Cheres, within it, then automatically it becomes tummy. But Tvul Yom, Yochia, right, the Tvul Yom will prove a different case.
Why? Because the Tzvul Yom has its own prohibitions. So he says, V'chozer hadin, so the argument continues, lo re'izeh k'rizeh, right? One aspect is not similar to the other aspect, v'lo re'izeh k'rizeh, nor is the second aspect like the first aspect. In other words, he cannot draw exact parallels, right? However, what is it? Hatzad hashover shebohen, what is the common denominator that they have? That's what we mean by the tzad hashover, literally that which is the side which is equal to all of them. This is the common denominator that we find among them, shemutorin b'chulin, that in any case they are permissible if it is chulin, in other words non-sacred food, right? But the postlin bitruma, and they make truma, they would make it possible. Okay, so kol shekain, all the more reason, kikar sheni, where we said sheposa b'chulin, it makes chulin no good, invalid, you can't do it. So the posa b'truma then certainly should be it should certainly make truma also invalid. No. Well, we're going to stop at this particular point. Because it's a very complicated business and it has to sink in a little bit.
Okay. They go far afield from
right, very far afield at the moment from Soto, although what started off actually was trying to make a comparison to Soto, as I said.
Yeah.
This is why they got involved in this whole deal, because if she is Tameo, you know, Vinitmo, and in that particular case, so there are other cases of tumah. Can we draw a lesson from one to the other?
Where do we go from here? We go to another.
We still continue this for another couple of pages. Finally, we get out of it and point to something else.
It's tough.
Right. Well, as you see, actually, there isn't so much left already in this particular chapter. Once we get beyond this business, it'll get a little bit easier. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Then we go back again to real stuff.
Yeah.
Hey, give up. Yeah. Well, it's boring. It's boring.
Yeah.
Well,
right. Why don't we count Sphera right now? It's dark enough.
I gotta say Krishna.
Yeah, we could say Krishna too. But Krishna, you could say either before Rabbi, the next day. Yeah. But why don't we count Sphera, okay? Trust I remember what it was last night. I think it was 25 last night.
Tonight is Wednesday night.
Okay. Baruch Ato Adonai Eloheinu Melech HaOlam Asher Kedushanu B'mitzvosav V'tzivanu Al Tzviras HaOmer Hayom Shisha V'yesrim Yom Sheheim Shlosho Shavuot V'chamisha Yomim LaOmer. 26th night, marking 3 weeks and 5 days on the Yomer count. Krishma, you can say at any time.
Yeah.
Even when you go to bed, you can also say a few paragraphs. But you know, if you poop, you're liable to forget. So that's why it's better to do it.
Next week we'll
meet same time. Yes, Hashem. Hopefully the weather.
The same time.
Through the end of August, you keep doubling until 7 o'clock. That's standard over here. We used to go according to sunset. I don't know if you remember when Rabbi Rosenzweig was the rabbi, and we switched to that. We tried also with sun and shine, but there was a reaction. A lot of people felt that to accommodate a clock to daven or 8:30 to come to daven or something like that, they found it rather difficult. So they went back to what the old system was at Springfield near the daven, and this was the system in Kesher. They still do the same thing.
I'm in the middle of the year.
Do you have a minion tonight?
Pardon me?
Do you have a minion tonight? His son came to visit him today.
Yeah.
Pinchas was here.
Oh,
he came to the home.
Yeah.
And I visited with his uncle.
Yeah.
And I understand that.
Carmen was at the dinner last night out here.
Yeah. And I understand that. Moshe's home from the hospital.
No. Hopefully he'll get better. What's on his operation? Is he having an operation?
He had an operation.
Oh, he had an operation.
Yesterday.
I see. What, it's supposed to be a cyst on his leg?
No, it's on his spine.
On the spine? It's more serious.
Yeah.
Rabbi, though, had a myelogram.
Yeah. The rabbi was here this morning.
Right.
He was here from Mitzvah Meir. So, what decision is he going to make now? He's going to make a decision.
Well, he knows that he has to be operated.
Question is, who does it and when?
Has confidence in this doctor that he went to see, Dr. Vincent, I don't know. He has a good
reputation. Yeah. Well, question is, when Carmen gets to go home, what's he going to do then?
Right.
Does he think he's going to resume his duties as a chassan?
I don't think
so. And
I don't
really
think that Kesser expects it.
Well. I know his son is coming to Shabbos. He'll be here for the weekend.
Yeah.
Coming soon. You need two hands sometimes, another hand sometimes.
What does Connie do on Shabbos?
Connie walks.
She walks.
She walks from home to the shul.
Right.
And she comes in about 9:30 or something.
It's not that far, you know. It's
It depends on
right.
Yeah, she comes and she stays for the day. And
there's going to be puzzle. It invalidates it, and therefore it cannot be given to the Kohen to eat. The Kohen is not allowed to eat it. Okay. Again, how do we define Truma? So we know Truma is a certain percentage of either grain or wine or oil. It's written in Torah, right? Which is given to the Kohen as his due. That's Truma. But in addition to Truma, we have another form of Truma, and that is Challah. Challah specifically is, you know, that when you mix together a large batch of dough, then part of the dough has to be separated, and in ancient days this was given to the Kohen as a gift. Okay? Now, in either case, whether it's Truma or whether it's Challah, because Challah is also, it's a form of Truma. Okay? In any case, as we said before, it has to be untouched by anything which is going to make it tame, and just as the Kohen himself has to be in a state of tara in order to eat this, is because this is considered holy food, just as much as, let's say, the meat from an animal sacrifice that the Kohen gets as his portion. Okay? Well, Choftes Amen Beis. Right. We're continuing from where we left off over here, right? Yeah. All right. So now comes the Gemara and says Vidor Acher, right? And the one that we just quoted about Rabbi Akiva being a new generation which would come along and try to declare that the Kikar, right, would be Tahor, would be Tameh. Not in the concept with Rabbi Yochanan Ben Zakkai, who predicted, that someday a generation would arrive. Right, yeah. So, Porich, he might ask the following question. Namely, Ma'ala Hatzad HaShavah Shabahen, what is the common denominator that we find among them? He says, Shekein Yesh Bahen Sat Chomer, right? Says, well, the common denominator that they have actually is not what we said a moment ago, namely that, Mutorin Bechulin, that they're permitted with Chulin and Postum Betruma, and they render invalid Truma. But he says there is a different common denominator that we find, namely that each of them have a Tzad Chomor, each of them has a certain severity in connection with it. In other words, a certain strictness that goes beyond the ordinary level. Okay, so the Rabbi Yochanan Ben Zakkai. So why didn't Rabbi Yochanan Ben Zakkai say the same thing in his generation? So he says Tzad Chomer LeParach. It didn't occur to him, this was not on his mind to ascertain this. Okay, so now they continue and says Tanya. We have learned as follows. It says Omer Rabbi Yossi. Rabbi Yossi says Minayan the Revi Bekodesh Apostle. Says, how do I know that a fourth degree in something which is holy is possible, is invalid? We've already said first degree, second degree, right, third degree, right, Rishon, Sheni, Shlishi, and now we have Revi. And he says, how do I know that if it is Kodesh, if it's sanctified food, that in that particular case, even if it's fourth hand already, right, it's the fourth time removed, from the primary source of tumor, but nevertheless it's still possible you're not allowed to use it, okay? So he says, with dinhu, he says, I derive it logically. Ma mechusa kipurim shemuta betruma posel bekodesh, just as we find in the case of a mechusa kipurim, who, remember I explained that that's a person who is waiting to bring the sacrifice after he has counted 7 days of cleanliness, okay? So, but he still didn't bring a sacrifice. So in that case, it says muta betrumo. What it means is that he is permitted that even if he touches truma, he doesn't make it invalid. This is how we have to understand the teaching over here, okay? But nevertheless, if it is kodesh, posel b'kodesh, in other words, if it's, let's say, sacrificial meat, then in that particular case, that being, a fourth degree, right, it still is invalid. So he says, shlishi sheposel b'trumo, isn't he a third degree? And nevertheless, he is posel b'trumo. So eino din shehu yaser revi b'kodesh, we have to assume that if a person already is, a third degree removed, but as a third degree removed, he is posel b'truma, that is, he renders truma invalid. So all the more reason then that it's going to create a revi, that if, let's say, the truma should happen to touch another thing, then that's going to invalidate, the sacrificial meat, the kodesh. In other words, a shlishi can create a revi, can make a revi. This is the point he's making, okay? And he says, "V'lamadnu shlishi l'kodesh min haTorah." He says, from the Torah itself, we learned the fact that shlishi, you can have a shlishi for kodesh, right? Or a revi. So how do I get a fourth degree? If the Torah only mentions three. Namely, it says, okay, we'll find the pasuk again over here. Anyway, the pasuk is right that if something, should touch the kodesh, right, something which is tummy, it automatically makes it tummy, and everything that in turn that the kodesh touches is going to be yitma, it's going to be unclean, it's going to be tummy. Okay, so in other words, from the Torah we can learn eshlishi, right? But how do I know that it's also possible that a shlishi could create a revi? So this, he says, is mekal v'chomer. I learned this by a kal v'chomer. In other words, if it's true so far up to shlishi, then in that case I can logically extend it one more step to revi. And this is what it is now.
Use that logic, you can go even further.
Yeah, of course, but they come to an end at some point. Truth of the matter is, so is there such a thing, for example, as a chamishi? The answer is no. In other words, the end of the line is Ravi. Okay.
Well, he went into that field to get a reason for that.
All right. So at any rate, he wants to show how he gets it by a kalvachom. He says, "Shlishi l'kodesh v'not Torah." How do I know? Minalon. How do I know it? The siv. Yeah, the pasuk that I had in mind. The haboso, right? The flesh. In other words, of course, this is sacrificial flesh that he's talking about. Of course, we're talking about the Mishkan and the subsequent David based on Mikdash, that the flesh, Asher Yigav, are called Tomei, right, which would touch anything which is Tomei. So, Lo Yeyochel, it cannot be eaten, right? So, in other words, we see already that if meat touches something Tomei, then in that particular case, it cannot be eaten. Okay. And he says, Mi Lo Askinen, Denoga Besheni. Aren't we dealing with a case where it touched something which was sheni, and so therefore it became what? A shlishi. Understand? The Yomar Rahmona, and the Torah said, Lo Yeyochel, the Torah says specifically it cannot be eaten. So in that case it says, Revi, so I'll go a step further, Revi, the Kal V'chomer. I can figure it out logically. Kedam Aron, right? As we have already said, that you can work it out logically. Okay. Omer Rabbi Yochanan, so Rabbi Yochanan said, Tam beribi einu yodea mahu, says, the reasoning of this rabbi, says, I don't know what it is. I don't understand it, he says. But nevertheless, Sha'arei Teshuva So Betzido, right? Because if you examine it in reality, you can find the answer is right next to the question. How is the answer right next to the question? Yeah, I know, it's very confusing. Take my word. It's a very confusing session that we're dealing with tonight. But Be'er Hashem, it'll get easier later on. I don't know if we'll get to the new part tonight, but if not, then next week we'll go. We'll come to a much easier section, okay? All right. So he says, Ochel Abba Machmas Tevul Yom Yokiach. Okay? It says, somebody, food which has come in contact with, Tevul Yom, which remember we said this is the person who has to wait until nightfall to become clean, right? Even though he's already been in the Mikveh before. So Yokiach, it will prove. Why? Because Shepasel Betruma. Right? He says, it is possible with Truma. How do I know it's possible with Truma? Because the Torah says, right, that what? That Uvo HaShemesh V'Toher, right? That once the sun sets, then he becomes clean, right?
Torah.
Right? V'Acha Yochal Min HaKodeshim. And then he can eat all kinds of holy food, okay? And in that case, Truma would be in the same category, all right? So even though he's a Tevul Yom, he's already reached the stage where he's gone and he's immersed himself in the mikveh, but nevertheless he still cannot eat any tumah until when? Until
nightfall.
Alright, so the Yeinu Eiser Revi'i Bakodesh, and at the same time it's not going to create a Revi'i stage. So in other words, with tumah, as far as you can go is only to what stage?
Shlishi.
Right, okay. Titania, as we have learned, Abba Shoal Omer, he says, Tevul Yom, right, Techilo Lekodesh, Letame Shnayim Lefsol Echad. He says that Tevul Yom is a first when it comes to holy things. Letame Shnayim, he's going to, he can create two further steps of Tome, right? In other words, he would be a primary source in this case, right? And then he could create two further steps. Let's say he touches something and that something touches something else, you understand? So that would be two steps. And the lifsol echad, and it stops at one stage. In other words, once it's gotten over there to the third stage, that's it, okay?
Excuse me, what is Tevul Yom?
Tevul Yom, again. Tevul Yom is a person. He became Tomei as a result of something like, for example, he had a seminal emission. Okay? So, in that particular case, naturally, he is unclean for that period of time.
How about the Poradoma guy?
Huh?
How about the Poradoma guy?
The Poradoma?
Yeah.